This episode is brought to you by Forever Cheese, a passion for great taste. Learn more at forevercheese.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're sipping on stories about how access, legislation, and circumstance affect what we drink.
I think now it's really changing that there's a growing excitement about drinks that are zero proof and alcoholic. So it just felt like kind of a very good timing.
This plant's been around for millions of years, and I just think that it's so special, so uniquely American and pre-American, that it just should have a very prominent place in our society, you know, for a lot of different reasons.
It is helpful to be able to sell one drink. It would be more helpful to be able to sell two or three at a time.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
And I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, buddy.
Guys.
Hey. Hey, hey.
Hey, I was just, I was thinking yesterday, so, it's been kind of cold and rainy here in California. I know, boo-hoo.
the one weekend of the year, right?
Yeah, exactly. But like, I was like a guilty food pleasure for me is chicken parm, and like, you know, with like a chicken parm. I know it's chicken, but it like with the, you know, marinara sauce. It's like it's a great red wine pairing. Had some great Montepulciano with it. But the thing is, it was my first. Last night, my brother and I and Blaine, our other bandmate, we always do band practice on Tuesday nights, and we go to dinner before that. And usually going to dinner has meant, you know, take out food, and then we eat in the parking lot of where our studio is. But last night, I actually dined indoors. It was cold and rainy, as
Whoa.
I said,
Whoa.
For the first time in a long time. Like, but an actual indoor dining situation. And it was the chicken parm and the Montepulciano were excellent, with, you know, obviously with a Fernet at the end, at least one. I got my second shot last night, a Fernet. So, but that kind of, that actually like leads me into what I was going to say. It's like dining indoors, chicken parm, and I don't know. All these things were very like, you know, like chicken parm to me is a comfort food, you know, and like, but I don't know. I'm still trying to get over the kind of awkwardness of like it was a great experience. It's at one of my favorite restaurants around here, but like still dining indoors. I don't know. I mean,
it's like, super weird, man. Like I don't know. I took the plunge into it myself. Like I was holding out for a while because I was like, it's not, you know, we all know it's not going to be the same, right?
Not for a while.
Yeah, but you know, I really like doing the zombie versions of things that I love to do, like eating out and going to bars and stuff like that. But two very, very dear friends of mine own a bar here in Bushwick called Phil's, and they were opening up for the first time since everything shut down. Like, they didn't even do the 25% capacity over the summer. And for the first time ever, they were like, whatever, fuck it, we're jumping in, we're doing it. If you want to come and sort of help us test drive this service, we'd appreciate that. So I went, and I had a lovely time. Food was great, drinks were great. It was just great to see other human beings, not through a glass screen. But I had a really weird experience getting up to leave. Because I was doing that thing, you know, it was cold. So I was like, okay, I have my hat, I have my gloves, I have my wallet, I have my phone, I have my keys. And I had a moment as I was standing up and I was like, where are
you
my shoes? And then I was like, they're on my feet. And I was like, but why? And they're like, because we never took them off. I was like, but we've been inside for over an hour and a half now. Why didn't I take my shoes off? It was just the most bizarre thing. And I was, it kind of made me realize, like, wow, we're gonna have a lot of psychological catching up to do once yeah. we're finally allowed back in public.
I'm
gonna
like
have
that
to relearn
pants.
All of these. Yeah, I know, right?
Like,
I'm gonna have to put on a shirt. Yeah, what am I, the Pope? Come on, man.
I really thought you were gonna say you tucked the tablecloth into your pants. and you stood up and cleared the table.
Classic physical comedy.
I had a bit of chicken parm myself this week, Damon. I wasn't indoors anywhere. I got one sent to me. It was a Zoom meeting with a bunch of people about one of our favorite subjects, whiskey. And we did a whiskey tasting. But they sent us all from Quality Italian here in New York. You know, they have the Quality line, Quality Meats, Quality Eats, Quality Italian. There's several. They sent us a chicken parm pizza, which my expectation was a pizza with bits of chicken parmesan on top. Much to my surprise, it came solidly frozen, so we cooked them ourselves. I thought they were going to arrive like hot from the restaurant because it was a timed event, but they came in the early afternoon with all the whiskey that we were going to taste. The chicken parm was the crust, so effectively they Frankenstein together enough chicken cutlets and then breaded them and cut it perfectly round, and then I suppose they fried that part off.
What?
Then topped it with, you know, marinara, cheese, etc., and then hard froze it. And so when it arrived, we just put it in the oven for an hour. It was goddamn delicious.
Yeah, something, no shit it was.
Something about the sort of double cooking of this thing made it extra crispy and the, you know, sort of cheesy gooiness. The sauce was thin and light enough that it didn't make the you know, the crust of the chicken parm, you know, soggy. And so further, frankly, inspired me to... This Sunday, I'm going to do another Instagram. I've done an Instagram live this past week where I cooked dinner. I put up a vote last time. I'm going to put up a vote this time. The vote's going to be between two similar items, right? Pork piccata or chicken parm. I'll be putting up the vote today, and whichever one wins on Sunday, I'll do it live on Instagram so people can cook along, and we'll make a cocktail as well. I think I'm going to make this into a series called Sunday Supper. So, chicken parm's on all our minds.
Yeah. That's,
yeah. Wow. I always am delighted when chicken looks at bread and just thinks, I could do that. I could do that better than you're doing that.
Right, the double down situation.
Man, guys, we should do a spinoff show from the Speakeasy. Like, we need to do a cooking food show. I think, Sutter, you can actually speak righteously to it, but, you know, Greg and I could talk about the consumption.
Yeah, exactly. So Damon, the show you're proposing is Souther Cooks and We Eat, because I'm so on board. I'll produce this show. I'm very on board with that.
Yeah, I'm on board as well, guys, if we can ever get to a place where we can be, you know, indoors with one another again. I am trying to secure my appointment at the, and Damon's going to love this, trying to secure my appointment at the Javits Center, right? Because now here in New York, Damon, the Javits Center is a 24-hour vaccination spot.
Holy shit.
That's right. They realize that New Yorkers are not always free in the times that they were offering vaccines. So now it's 24 hours, and I have deemed it the Javits Center in your honor. I know you love a good pun.
Yeah, man, that's great. Well, that's kind of what my point was with the whole chicken parm thing. It's, you know, my very clear, like, focused thinking on any subject. It usually starts with food. To get to my point, what is the, like, because I know that out here in California, like, people are, a lot of the industry folks have been getting vaccines, but it looks like, just from what I see on social media, a lot of our New York friends have been vaccinated twice, or they're already through it, and I just kind of wanted to get your take on where things are out there. Are you guys, you haven't, but...
I haven't even gotten a single one yet, and I'm remiss. It's my own fault. I've simply been a bit lazy about trying to secure an appointment. But now that appointments are kind of free-flowing, I'll get it done pretty quickly, I assume. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. Many of our colleagues and friends, like just this past week, many of my friends have started the wave of second jabs already, which seems like, wow, I'm so behind because, you know, it's a month between one and two. But yeah, I think it's the rollout here is speeding up as we go along.
Well, you could always just go in for the Johnson & Johnson No More Tears one shot.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you get to choose, but if that happens, that'd be great, especially since I don't have a problem with the pain of a needle. I'm pretty good with pain, but once, and that's all it takes. When I was 22 years old, I was getting a shot for whatever, I don't even remember, and I passed out. So now I have a tremendous anxiety over needles. So having to go, knowing I have to go twice is certainly slowing down my motivation to get it done. However, I understand its importance, and I'm way on board. It's just a matter of having to motivate myself a little extra.
Yeah, get motivated, man. I mean, there's.
If it means I'm going to get to visit California and see your new house, then fucking I'm going to get it done.
Well, not only that, but I mean, like, I know that we're all like dying of like kind of being grounded. This time last year, Souther and I were in Oaxaca for the speakeasy. And, right. You know, like, we're used to doing that kind of stuff, like, pretty much, we were lucky enough to be able to do that kind of stuff, like, once a month at least. And, you know, I'm just excited to start traveling the world again, to be honest with you, and have you come visit.
Both of those things. Speaking of traveling the world, let's do that virtually right now. Greg, who's in the virtual studio with us?
Joining us in the virtual studio live from Reykjavik, Iceland, we have Teitur Riddermann Schjot. He is a all-over amazing bartender and formerly of the world-famous Pablo Disco Bar. So, Teitur, thank you so much for joining us, man. How are you?
All good. Thank you guys so much for having me. So excited to do this.
Absolutely, man. Yeah,
are you a chicken parm guy?
I love chicken parm, but you know, I keep hearing about this thing called Chick-fil-A in the United States, and I have that. You can explain to me what that is, actually.
It's a protein delivery vehicle for Polynesian sauce. That's what it is.
I didn't understand anything you just said, but it sounds good.
Yeah, I think the going concern in Iceland is puffin parm, right?
Puffin parm, yeah. Well, yeah, there are some restaurants that actually serve puffin. It's delicious, actually. Hope
not
offend anybody with saying that, but puffin meat is best cured. Dried or cured. Yeah, it's
delicious. I don't think you're offending anyone in the virtual studio here, and I don't think you're offending our audience either. If that's what's eaten there, that's fine. I got to visit Iceland and ate some puffin while I was there.
Puffin well. Like the little cute birds?
Yes.
Yep.
Fuck you guys.
Damon, chickens are pretty cute little birds too, you know.
I know.
We got to go there. My partner at the time, Max Green, and I came over for the Bar Summit.
The Bar Summit. Yeah. Hosted by Ásgeir Már Björnsson, right?
Indeed. Yeah. What a good time that was.
I was a volunteer for both of the events, so I remember it. It was a fun time, definitely.
Right. So we probably met face-to-face, and I just don't remember. I will admit that I'll admit that while I was there, I had many, many drinks.
So you had some brennivin.
We it flows like water there.
Yeah, exactly.
It flows like beautiful crystalline Icelandic water. Brennivín is ubiquitous everywhere you go.
Yeah. It's a good way to say it.
So there's you might know this actually. One of my favorite facts about Brennivín and Iceland is that Iceland had prohibition until relatively late, right? It's sometime in, I want to say 82, is that right?
The actual prohibition for strong alcohol actually ended in 35. And that was the year that they started producing Brennivín and selling it. The beer was actually banned until 1989. So we had no beer until 1989.
Right. So, a curious opposite thing, right? Like no beer, but spirits were allowed.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Right. But the thing is what people used to do, they used to take non-alcoholic beer and blend it with Brennivín and make this drink called Björliki, which was the thing that people used to drink. It's crazy.
That actually sounds kind of good. Like if you got a really nice, like, you know, malty beer with some barley flavor in there and you got the caraway seeds from the caraway flavor from the Brennivín, like that sounds like it could be a really, you know.
A great like boiler maker.
Yeah. A boozy everything bagel of a drink.
A delicious boiler maker. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Could work.
Yeah. Well, apparently it did. It has.
It has several decades.
Yes.
Yeah.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes.
So, Teitur, you correct me if I'm wrong. You've done a little bit of work with Brennivín in the past. Is that right?
Yeah, so my work started with Brennan in 2016, actually. So I competed in the national like Brennan cocktail competition, which I won at the time. And after that, I started working for them and started working for Iceland Naturally as well, it's a marketing company based in the United States, which main goal is to market Iceland as a country for tourism.
Right. Wasn't there like a cross the pond, like was it Icelandic Airways or something like that? Where like if you stopped in Reykjavik, like your flights were like $99 or something. It was something insane like that, right? Am I just making that up?
Yeah, it was so insane that the airline actually went bankrupt. So it's
right.
Oh, man, this will be a shot in the arm for the economy. It'll also destroy our business.
Yeah, but it was basically everyone was like using that flight to go to like London or Paris from New York. And it was like,
oh, you're talking about the stopover. Yeah. 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 So Iceland Air has this thing called the stopover, which, you know, you fly to Iceland and you don't pay anything extra to, you know, fly across.
Right. Yeah, so like people were like, it's kind of like whenever like here in the States, like where, you know, you can get a free like week long vacation if you like spend an hour of one of the days looking at a timeshare condo like in like Boca Raton or, you know, wherever the hell it might be. And so it's basically, you know, not the rate of people actually like signing up for the timeshares is not like very high, but, you know, you get one out of every, you know, five people, and you've paid for all those other vacations that were essentially free for. I've done it a couple of times. That's how I went to Hawaii the second time.
Yeah, it's a good strategy.
Yeah, I love it.
And hopefully Iceland Air will keep doing that when we're allowed to travel again.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, speaking of travel, there's something I the notes that you sent us that I really want to ask about. So it says here that you sort of got cut your teeth at the European Bartending School in Thailand, of all places. So talk to us about that experience and sort of how you wound up there and just generally what this place was like.
Well, yeah, of course. This was, you know, kind of in the beginning of my career as a bartender. And I was working at Slipparen at the time with Ausgeir, which hosted the bar summit that you were talking about before. But I wanted to kind of enhance my experience, you know, and get as far away from Iceland as possible to try to do something fun. So the European Bartender School has schools all around the world, also in Thailand. So, yeah, I decided to go there. It's a month's course. It's a lot of studying classical recipes and some flair as well, which is fun. It's also a lot of partying as well. So, I love making a party. It was a fun experience, but you know, the school itself is not you don't have Thai people teaching you how to bartend. You know, Europeans that actually run the school. So European teachers. They just base these schools all around the world, so people have the option of traveling wherever they want to go, which is really smart.
That's super cool. It's kind of, I don't know. I'm really intrigued by the idea of, you know, someone from, you know, the general like European theater saying, yeah, I want to train at one of these really prestigious schools that are scattered all over the world, but I'm going to pick one that's pretty much on the opposite side of the globe just to kind of get out there. And I feel like did that juxtaposition kind of inform a lot of what you were learning about, because you'd be learning, you know, all these kind of, you know, Western European style techniques, but then you'd be living in Thailand and sort of seeing what was, you know, going on there. And it wasn't like you'd step out of the school into a completely different environment and kind of get the best of both worlds that way.
It was a different environment. Yes, definitely. Like in Iceland, young people have this kind of, idea that it's better to live somewhere else or better to travel somewhere else and, you know, get away from the rock in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean to, you know, try to experience something fun, which I did a couple of times. I lived in Germany, for example. But then you start to understand that it's actually not so bad living in Iceland. It's actually great compared to other things. But talking about the Thailand adventure, yeah, different culture, definitely. You know, you went to Patong Beach, which is kind of the party town there, and you had the Patong Street as well, or Bangla Road, as they call it there. And you have all these kind of bars doing, you have all these, you know, ladyboys dancing around everywhere, everybody trying to get something from you. Everybody wants to, you know, make you a suit. Everybody wants to take you somewhere. Everybody wants to. It's, yeah, it was kind of a shock, but, you know, I got used to it and just had fun with it.
I especially love being in Bangkok because everywhere you go, they give you cashew nuts for like a bar snack, and I like in the United States they're kind of like, it's kind of like a treat yourself thing. They're like, are more expensive than peanuts and stuff. So like, I was just like, I love cashews, and like they're just free everywhere. And so like, that's like kind of the only thing I remember from
come
my
for the culture, stay for the cashews.
Yeah, no, you know the thing is like, speaking of the European bartending school, like, you know, like Jay Borowski had his bar there and a bartending school as well. So I think that, you know, I what got me about Bangkok is that, like, there was much more of I was talking with my girlfriend about this the other day too, about like, you know, we have bar smarts here, and that's like kind of the only thing that we have as far as like an accredited, like, kind of like bartending school type thing. I mean, there are bartending schools, but like, I feel like typically, like, whenever we get a resume from someone who's gone to bartending school,
yeah, if it says... The eyes roll pretty hard.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
Yeah, I've heard this before. That's kind of...
Well, it's because it's like these... You're basically, like, mixing with, like, colored liquids, and, like, you're not really making... It's, like, more about, like... I don't know. It's not making real cocktails. It's about a little bit more, like... kind of like cheesy flair and stuff, and like, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, it's these schools, these kind of like older school schools, they really teach you a lot of bad habits, or they have for a long time. And that's why, you know, we've had a couple of guests on the show who've said that they, you know, they actually went to bartending school back in the day, and it's just kind of funny. You're like, really, you?
Yeah, Chris Lauder comes to mind immediately.
Right, exactly. So, but like, to have these elevated, like, actual, like, bartending schools available in, like, different countries is reason enough for American bartenders to go. And
well, I think the European model is a little bit sort of advanced on us, because unlike in the American model, or just in American society, I guess, I don't think elsewhere in the world bartending has ever been looked upon as just something you do while you're in college, which is very common here. For a long time, it was looked on. It was looked at as like not really a career path. This is just a holdover position. This is just a job to get you by, put a little extra cash in your pocket while you're in school or what have you. I think it's, you know, just as the hotel schools and the culinary schools in the rest of the world are all considered to be, you know, a little bit more serious than we are here.
Yeah, just something to pay the bills.
Yeah, I think what I appreciated about that school in Thailand, the European Bartender School, is that they went over so much. You know, they taught you every single classic cocktail that you had to know. So, and they went into the theory of, you know, everything, all the spirits and everything like that. So the master classes and the theory classes is what I appreciated most about that school, actually. And then they teach you flair and some, you know, working techniques. But I think you just evolve that within yourself, you know, how you work behind the bar. So, but yeah, I appreciated the theory more than anything else with the European Bartender School.
Yeah, I think again they carry a little bit more respect than the schools here in America, with the exception, of course, of like Damon mentioned, Bar Smarts and its whole program. This seems like a good place to pause and hear from our sponsors here on Heritage Radio Network. We're going to come back and keep talking with Teitur from Iceland about, I think next we should talk a little bit about Pablo Disco Bar. So stay tuned, everybody. We're going to be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Forever Cheese. Forever Cheese has been a pioneer in the specialty food industry for over 20 years. They source the most exceptional, authentic, and creative artisan cheese and accompaniments from Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Croatia. Every product they carry is thoughtfully hand-selected from their trusted producers in Europe. The standards of Forever Cheese are legendary. Many of their products, including Drunken Goat, Genuine Fulvi Pecorino Romano, Mitica Marcona Almonds, and Fig and Date Cakes, are now integral to today's market. You can learn more about their product lineup at forevercheese.com. Forever Cheese is proud of their role as a trusted authority in the specialty cheese world. Their philosophy is to put passion behind everything they do, from finding the best products to celebrating those who make them. Forever Cheese, a passion for great taste. Finally, Forever Cheese remembers and celebrates the life of James Coogan, a great man who is truly passionate about cheese and the industry and lived his life to the fullest. Thanks to Forever Cheese for supporting this episode. Learn more at forevercheese.com.
Are you longing for a trip to Mexico? Do you want to taste mezcal straight out of a wood-fired clay pot still at a palenque in Puebla? Well, we can't help you with that, but we can offer the next best thing, Agave Road Trip in a Box. This set of 10 samples of rare heritage agave spirits will transport your heart with the warmth of liquid Mexico. Get your set at agavefestival.org and then join Agave Road Trip podcast co-host Chava and me, Lou, for an online tasting. Agavefestival.org is the break you've been looking for, or as close as you're going to get.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. In the studio today, we have our friend Tater. Actually, he said that we could call him Tater Tot, so I'm going to call you Tater Tot for the rest of the show. Is a tater tot like okay? So the other day, I was talking with some guests at the California Brandy House about the differences between brandy and whiskey. You know, obviously it's made from wine; one's made from beer, and essentially, if you just want to really dumb it down, and then one guest asked the other, "So what's vodka made from?" And then the other one said, "It's made from French fries." And so, like, but I like the idea of a tater tot more than a French fry because it kind of resembles a little shot glass. Anyway, yeah. And you can put a little caviar on top of it.
I think our spinoff show is not going to be about food. It's going to be about the mind and imagination of one Damon Bolte.
A tater shot. Anyway, so we were going to talk about. That's going to be the new hard start, I think.
Yes,
tater shot. I mean, if you can make a pizza crust out of a chicken, was it like okay? I had a theory about this, by the way. I just want to like sidebar a little bit.
First of all, I took a photo of it, so I'll post it on the Instagram.
We're gonna need that.
Yeah.
Was it like did they pound it out like a schnitzel? Basically,
is that effectively? What happened? Yeah, but it was. Again, as big around as a standard pizza, what, 12, 14 inches, I guess?
So it was made, it wasn't chicken, it was like a turkey.
No, no, like I mentioned, sort of Frankensteined. I'm sure there were multiple cutlets that were pounded together. You know, protein will bond to itself when it gets cooked, and certainly when it gets kind of mashed together. Cool. You know, it's like that. You ever have a deep dish pizza from Chicago? If you get sausage, the whole bottom of the pizza is one giant disc of sausage.
Right.
It's kind of that kind of vibe.
Gotcha. Well, anyway, Pablo Disco Bar.
Back to the show.
About that.
Now,
are we live?
Now, yeah, we're live. We've been cooking this whole time.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about Pablo Disco Bar. I never got to go to this place, but it's like steeped in legend. So I want to hear it from you.
What's your take on? The story of Pablo Disco Bar.
Yeah.
All right. Here it goes. So I was working at Slipparen with Oscar Mor, my kind of mentor in at the bar, and which is also the guy that hosted one of the founders of the Reykjavik Bar Summit. So he was hired to take over a project, actually, which was Pablo Disco Bar at the time. So I followed him to there, And that amazing bar opened. So he hired all the best bartenders in Reykjavik. But as you might know, when too many cocks come together, then, you know, it sometimes causes problems. So basically, he had to quit and the other guys had to quit. So I was left there with Pablo. And yeah, so what I did, or what we did, we created a team around it. So we had this idea of actually making world's 50 best bars. So that was our goal from the beginning, you know, not with the usual, like, cocktail bars all on the molecular cocktail making and that, but having, you know, the ambience and the fun of it, the main part, which we did quite a good job. We traveled around the world with the Pablo World Tour. We hosted pop-ups all around the world, or like all around the world, mostly in the United States, but some in Europe as well. We all had the same tattoo, the Pablo Discobar tattoo, which is maybe similar to the EO idea of having the same tattoo. But ours is a little bit more creative. It's a flamingo in a martini glass holding a yo-yo. That's a disco ball. And,
Can I get this tattoo?
Yeah, you can get the tattoo. So what we did is that one of our bartenders, Akira, he was a tattoo artist as well. So we did the tattoos. We made the tattoos at the bar itself in the private room. So yeah, it was a fun team. It was a fun show. It was we worked, you know, every single weekend, you know, just banging out drinks and you know, the place was, yeah, it was crazy since we just opened. But eventually, I had to think more about my, you know, my well-being. So, you know, towards the end in 2019, I decided to go to a quieter gig because, you know, the whole goal for me and our team was to make that top 50 list, or at least the top 100 list. And when we went to BCB, the Berlin Bar Convent, once, we talked to a good friend of Pablo's, Greg Boehm from Cocktail Kingdom. And he actually said that a lot of people voted for us. So we would like to think that we were number 101 on that list. So after that, you know, like, I thought to myself, you know, we're never going to make this happen. So, you know, I was hired to a more quiet establishment, more, you know, towards like luxury service with wine and things like that. But yeah, the Pablo experience, the Pablo life, it's, you know, it was a lot of fun, I'll tell you.
What set Pablo Disco Bar apart as a bar? What was the concept there that made it so intriguing for people?
Well, it's maybe hard to explain. It was just when you came out the door, you would, you know, come into another world, you know, bartenders with flamethrowers, always a host in a red jacket or a burgundy jacket, just dancing, you know, greeting you. The place was stuffed. It was really hard to find seats on the weekends, definitely. But we just, you know, we just said, keep the people coming. There's no limit. And
that's my nightmare. Like, that's like my main source of anxiety in my life. It's like, I like, just like, the doors just open and people are just coming in, and it happens at my bar all the time, and it's like, it's literally shut me down on occasion.
Yeah.
So good on you.
that's where I thrive, right? I want them packed in as tight as we can get them.
Yeah, I mean, like, also a part of the experience is that we had the restaurant downstairs from us, Burro. It was, you know, part of the same company. So we had the restaurant and the Pablo. So the whole experience was coming to Burro, the restaurant, having some South American food tacos or, you know, some steaks and stuff like that, and nice wine, and then finishing that and going up and finishing the night at Pablo and partying there until like 3 o'clock in the morning. That was the whole package.
Wow.
You left there, but since then, so a bit of tragedy has befallen the space in general, right?
Yeah. So what happened when I left, just before, or it was during COVID, it was in, I think, in March 2020, that a guy, it's a funny story. There's a guy that's become famous in Iceland for this. He probably was... I don't know, had a few too many drinks. And he stole a cement truck and drove the cement truck against traffic to get to his girlfriend because his girlfriend was having troubles. So he got arrested for that. But the system here in Iceland is that, you know, they really don't put you to jail. They just took his report and let him go the day after. But what happened after that is that a week later, he broke into Pablo, stole all the money and lit the place on fire. And
holy shit.
Yeah. And was arrested. He was arrested right away. So he didn't get away with it, but yeah, lit it on fire. So the roof went, the storage room went, and they say with fires like that, what the fire doesn't destroy, the water destroys. There was a lot of damage, but the place isn't gone. So they managed to refurbish it now. So it's ready actually for service again. But now because of COVID, it's really hard to start it up again because there's just not the resources. The resources are just not there for to make it happen, unfortunately.
Well, also, like a place like that, obviously these days with social distancing, you can't pack people into a place like that anymore, right? And that's kind of like a huge draw, is that kind of crazy party vibe, I would assume.
Well, yeah, the crazy party disco vibe. So, you know, the idea was to try and to create like a Studio 54 kind of vibe with it, which... And also just the design of the place was really beautiful as well, with the mirrors in the ceiling and, you know, the wallpapers and the toilets and everything. It's just like, but, you know, people kept coming.
I mean, is there a sense of like, because, you know, this is something that we're all kind of struggling with as an industry over this past year, is like, okay, when we are allowed to go back to having as many guests as we want in our establishments, do we put everything back exactly where it was on March 15th, 2020? Or do we take this as a chance to try new things, to go in a direction that, you know, we might not have before, or, you know, grab that folder of ideas that we thought were like too crazy to work and dip into that? Is that something that is happening over there? Or is it going to be, you know, the same old Pablo that we remember pre-pandemic, pre-cement truck, pre-fire?
Well, it's unknown actually, because the owners, they actually put the place on sale, so it's for sale now. So they own another bar called Bar Miami, which is just up the street, and they're trying just to run that and to keep the business going. So while that is happening, you know, the place is for sale, so we don't really know what's going to happen.
Woof. You have an alibi for the night of the fire because you've been gone for a little while before that happened. So that's good. So talk to us a little bit about what you've got going on now and some other projects that you might have in the works.
Well, yeah, of course. So the thing is, what happened after the Pablo adventure is that I went to work in the north of Iceland in like a luxury lodge, and that closed due to COVID. So then I had to think, do something, you know, start working again or Oh, yeah. So I actually helped them out, consulted a little bit at the other place, Bar Miami. And now I'm going to be helping with a new project that's going to open up in the beginning of May, and which is going to be the first speakeasy bar in Iceland. Woo!
Whoa!
can you elaborate, or is this hush hush at this moment?
It's a speakeasy, Souther. Of course, he can't say anything about it.
I mean, we're on the speakeasy.
That's true.
Maybe because we're on the speakeasy, we can make an exception for this. So there's a restaurant in Reykjavik. It's called Snaps, and this restaurant is known for a particular clientele. You know, where important people come to be seen, like politicians, actors, and stuff. And this place has such a good clientele, a steady clientele. And they closed actually because of COVID, but they're opening up, the restaurant's opening up next month. So this company or this group is going to open up three units or three places. It's going to be a wine bar, Boteca, just across the street from Snaps. Snaps the restaurant is going to open again in a really beautiful spot in the basement of Snaps. It's a really beautiful room, just perfect for that kind of place. And there's no name yet for the place, but it's gonna be one of a kind here in the city, in the Smoky Bay, Reykjavik.
That's amazing. Is there so what's the is there sort of a transportive element that, like, you know, are you going to hide the entrance in like a giant ice cream freezer or something like that? Or is that a secret or still in the works?
We really got to get that food show going, man.
Maybe we're all just hungry. We're broadcasting at lunchtime today, at least on the true. East Coast. So maybe that's what it is.
It's about to be dinner time here, actually. But well, that idea hasn't been decided yet, but the place is being refurbished to look like a proper speakeasy bar.
Like 19th century kind of style, like old school? Is that where you're saying?
Well, maybe with a little more modern touches, actually.
Gotcha.
But okay. I'm not a part of the design team, but it's the same guy that designed Pablo Disco Bar and Lofty, which are two of the, I would say, in my opinion, most beautiful bars in that I've ever opened in Reykjavik. So yeah, it's going to be beautiful. But the idea of having something like that with the freezer, like you just said, or maybe a doorbell, just hasn't been decided. But the entrance to the place is a stairwell down from the restaurant, which is kind of hidden. Yeah, and it's to start with, it's only going to be open Fridays and Saturdays, and then we're going to see how it goes from there.
Should hide the entrance behind a giant chicken parm. No one will ever suspect it.
Puffin parm.
Even better. Well, that's amazing, man.
So hidden inside. Sorry, I didn't realize I had my mute button on. So hidden inside of the restaurant. Is it going to be sort of an invite-only situation to the patrons of the restaurant, or is it going to be will these politicians, actors, important clientele be sitting there at the restaurant having dinner, and you know just the bar clientele be walking through to get to the stairwell in the back?
Well, it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be open access to anybody, of course, but yeah, it's going to be. It's going to be for the people that know about it, you know, and it's probably going to be a reservation only for that place. Or,
I love that.
Yeah, you want to get down, then the host, you know, will take your name and then call you when he has a free place. But yeah, if you know about it, then sure.
Hey, Souther, remember John Barleycorn?
I was about to say that this sounds like John. This sounds like John Barleycorn's apartment. That's where I was going. You picked up on it.
Yeah, we did something similar years ago, but it was the most boring bar. Like the way we had it set up was like we had a neighbor that was like directly like on the other side of this wall, and so this neighbor already hated us because the restaurant was very lively and successful and loud on the weekends. And so we decided to build a speakeasy upstairs, which is actually where this guy's like, it butted up to the neighbor's bedroom, which is like, we were just asking for it. We're asking to get shut down basically. And I brought in a turntable, just like a little like kind of suitcase turntable, and like curated some very quiet records. And like told people they couldn't take photos or be on their cell phones. Basically, they couldn't talk. You know, it was like, so we did that for a few months and then we closed it. This sounds like what we were trying to do.
Yeah. It was fun. On the tables, we had decks of cards and poker chips, and it was invite only. The management team would invite you up if the bar was crowded. You couldn't leave and come back. If you left, you were gone. And
you couldn't go out and smoke.
No money was exchanged. I was the bartender there. That's why we were talking about it together. We would just jot down people's what they drank, their consumption, and then when their table was ready in the restaurant and the management would come and get them, we'd just hand them a little chit and they'd add it to their bill downstairs. It was really fun and intimate and cute, but it was short lived because of its tedious nature.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys actually are doing this right.
Well, yeah, you know, this place is going to be having the support of the two other places. You know, this place is not meant to, I don't know, it's maybe it's not going to make any profit, you know, but that's
awesome. That's so great. I mean, like, I wish we could do that with all of our bars, you know, like, honestly, that's kind of like what Greg was saying at the beginning of the show, when he was leaving and he was like, why do I have my shoes on? You know, I always thought that, like, how cool would it be if you could just like get up and walk out of a bar or restaurant? Like if there was some sort of like, it's like when you have like an easy pass in your car, like whenever you go through tolls, you just like pew pew and you don't stop. You just keep going. You know, there was some way to do that in bars and restaurants. Maybe I'll build an app for that. I don't know. But like
I think it exists. Yeah. Where you can pay, it's almost like an Uber. You pay as before you it just automatically happens. You just leave.
And then, like, add gratuity, you know, whatever, like, and then you just get up and go. How awesome is that? So, I like the idea of not having to worry about, like, as a business owner, like, not having to worry about that exchange at the end of everything. Because it kind of, like...
I mean, Damon, maybe you'd be the resurrector of the notion of tabs. You know, when I was a kid, my dad owned a bar, and people had tabs. They did just walk out, and dad would add it to their tab and bill them monthly. You get a monthly bill.
That's awesome. Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
I think there it is. And you know, maybe Tater can do that as well at the new yet to be named speakeasy bar in Iceland.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and you know, the people that listen to the show and want to have a seat at the new bar, you know, I think they know where to find me. So yeah, some people traveling from the United States.
Cool. Hey, yeah. Do you have speaking of that, I know that, like, you know, like one of my things that I miss the most about traveling is being able to pick up like cool booze from other countries and like other things like bar tools and, you know, certain ingredients that you can't really find in other places. Like, to me, like, I mean, obviously we're going to, by the end of the show, the tater tot shot is going to be like a viral hit, but like...
I hope so.
Obviously.
I have some old bottles of Brennivin in my bar at Grand Army, you know, before it was really so available in the United States. And I was just wondering if there's anything like that, that when we do come to visit you, is there anything you want us to bring so you can put it behind the bar?
Well, yes, definitely.
Yes is the answer. Yeah. It sounds like he's got a list. I was just going to say like one thing, but yeah, sure. Okay. Fine. Send us your list.
There's a lot of stuff that we don't have here in Iceland, of course.
Right. Because
we're an island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. But yeah. The thing is, you know, it's gotten better and better in the last years. the selection of alcohol that we get. But, you know, if you're coming, just please let me know and we'll make arrangements.
So you're going to put me on the wait list is what you're saying. I'm still going to have to wait when I get there.
I'll put you on the priority list.
Oh, that means we're guest bartending, Souther.
Yeah, exactly. You went from being a guest to having to work.
Hey, you know what? I want to do both.
Talking about guest bartenders, we had a team over from Seattle actually guest bartend at Pablo Disco Bar, along with a few others from Europe. So I'm all up for guest bartenders when things start to open again.
Who'd you have over from Seattle?
We had one of our reps for Brandivin, Jamie Buckham, and her crew, mm-hmm. Rocky as well. He was there. Do you know Rocky? Oh,
yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
sadly, miss him a lot. That's awesome. Oh my gosh, that brightens my day a little bit to hear that he was involved in something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always does. I had such a fantastic time when I was in Iceland. I joke a lot about how much we drank, which we did. But I did get to enjoy a lot of breathtaking vistas. We actually got to see Aurora Borealis. We were in a hot spring. We were up on a mountain inside an iceberg. Basically, they bored it out and made it into sort of a church and a place you could go to get married. And they hosted us there, and we did an event inside of an iceberg, which was crazy.
Do you remember who you married?
Everybody. the water there, unbelievable. Just everywhere you went, just tap water, amazing. The most, like, I think maybe even you, Tater, as a resident. Maybe when you travel the world, you realize it. But man, your water is the best water ever. So pure.
We're really lucky for that, and the air here as well. Because you know, when we go abroad, you know, anywhere else to Europe or United States, when we go out of the plane and go out of the airport, it's like hitting a wall. You know, so yeah, we're really lucky to have the water that we have and the air and the fresh air that we have as well. It's great.
Really incredible, and the people there are all charming as fuck, and frankly they're all, I haven't seen a picture of you, but frankly they're all gorgeous. They're all, you know, taller than us, better skin than us, you know, like just an amazing time that I had there. We were there for 5 days and it was really charming. Plus the landscape there looks otherworldly, you know. Speaking of getting off the plane, when we got off the plane I was like, did we take a plane to another planet? Like, just the landscape itself is very unique.
Yeah, definitely for adventurers and people that like the outdoors, is Iceland is a good choice for traveling.
All right, we're going.
yeah, exactly. We're taking a field trip. We're going.
Well, yeah, I'll host you guys definitely wherever. Right.
Cool. Well, man, it sounds like we've got a lot of planning to do here, guys. We've got to get over to Iceland and hang out with Tater Tot and fully develop the Tater Tot shot.
Yeah, I got to get over to the Javits Center so I can get on a plane.
But this is really cool. It's been awesome talking with you. There's we've said this almost on every episode lately, you know, since COVID happened, that it's like our studio got bigger because, you know, since we're doing everything virtually, it's, you know, we can have guests on from anywhere in the world. And so it's really been great to like broaden the audience and the guests for the speakeasy. So this has been really great. Thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, guys. It's been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Tater, do you have social media or anything like that you'd like to let people know where they can follow along with your exploits and see what's going on with the upcoming bar?
Well, yeah, definitely. I don't know about the upcoming bar, but for myself, my Instagram handle is TheTaterTot, just my name instead of the Tater, actually. And people that are interested in the spirit, Brennivin, the original spirit of Iceland, should check out Brennivin.com. Those two.
Right, so that's awesome. The TheTaterTot. I'll have that in the show notes. The Tater Tot on Instagram. And then obviously check out Brennewin as well.
Yes.
While we were there, I would mention while we were there, we had, I assume it's just a yearly release. It was either seasonal or Christmas. Is there a Christmas Brennewin?
There is a Christmas Brennewin, which is a barrel-aged version of the Brennewin. So it differs from year to year what kind of barrels or casks they use for that the Brennewin edition.
It's delicious.
It was outstanding.
So just, awesome. You know, the regular Brennewin with that, you know, those really nice vanilla chocolate caramel flavors, you know, with the Christmas flavors.
Man,
it was outstanding. We really enjoyed it.
I love that stuff. And again, it does make a very nice Boilermaker.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
That sort of little kiss of caraway and dill.
Brennewin started exporting to the United States in I think around 10 years ago. So yep. Brennewin USA. His name is Joe. He lives in Wyoming, which takes care of the whole Brennewin market in the United States. So
from Wyoming, wow,
that's just odd home base.
Yes, definitely.
Oh yeah. We've had Brennewin on the bar at Amore Margo for years. It's a staple. This has been a real a great chat with you, Tater. Thanks for spending some time with us here on the Speakeasy, all the way from Iceland. We look forward to a day when we can get over there and travel again and hang out and maybe do a guest shift at your upcoming Secret. And we'd love to, of course, host you here in America. Come on over. We've got places for you to crash, and we'll put you to work as well. So thanks again for joining us here. That's it for this week's episode of the Speakeasy. Tune into Heritage Radio Network for plenty more shows just like this one. And cheers, everybody. Good talking to you today.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues, that's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like. Tell your friends. And please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.